The rise of National Socialism. Who are the real socialists? The rise of National Socialism to political prominence during the 1920s brought the abstract debate to particular focus, as the National Socialists, the Communists, and the Social Democrats all argued variations on the same themes and competed for the votes of the same constituencies. The Socialist Social Democrats and the Communists had split over whether socialism would be achieved by evolution or revolution. Hard feelings also existed between the two parties over the Spartacist Revolt of 1919, in which the Communists had risen up violently against an elected socialist regime. Thus, the Social Democrats, in point of theory and in order to attract votes, regularly argued that there was no essential difference between the Communists and the National Socialists. Both favored violence rather than peaceful and democratic procedures. The Communists also returned the favor often, arguing that the Social Democrats and the National Socialists had both in various ways sold out to capitalism. Ernst Thälmann, for example, in a speech to the plenary session of the Central Committee of the Communist Party of Germany, argued that the Social Democrats and the National Socialists were ideological twins. The Social Democrats were willing to compromise with other parties and share power with them. Only endless bickering and vacillation could result from that, which would serve only to maintain the capitalist status quo. The National Socialists, of course, were on the political right, so by definition they had to be in the pocket of the capitalists. The National Socialists recognized that they were on the right and that the Social Democrats and the Communists were on the left, but they found little practical difficulty wooing voters away from both parties by emphasizing the socialist elements of National Socialism, and they did not find that the theoretical goals of the three parties were that far apart. Hitler, for example, declared that, quote, basically, National Socialism and Marxism are the same, unquote. And Joseph Goebbels, who had a PhD in philology and perhaps a better claim to understand the theoretical issues, argued the same point. Goebbels' social thinking had been influenced strongly by Spengler and by his reading of the major left socialists. He represented a strong voice within the National Socialist Party for its economically socialist planks. Goebbels' hatred of capitalism was legendary, as was his hatred of money. Money, he wrote, quote, is the source of all evil. It's as if mammon were the embodiment of the principle of evil in the world. I hate money from the deepest depths of my soul, unquote. Only socialism would oppose the corruption of liberalism and capitalism. Quote, liberalism means I believe in mammon, unquote, wrote Goebbels in his 1929 Michael, a novel that went through 17 editions by 1942. Quote, socialism means I believe in work, unquote. Thus, Goebbels had often been more than willing to make speeches and write conciliatory essays to the communists, asking them to recognize that the National Socialists' and communists' major goals of overthrowing capitalism and achieving socialism were the same, and that the only significant difference between the two was that the communists believed that socialism could be achieved at the international level, while the National Socialists believed that it could and should occur at the national level. The differences between National Socialism and Communism boiled down to a choice between the dictatorship of the folk and the dictatorship of the proletariat. In this intellectual and cultural context, it is understandable that voters who often favored the Social Democrats in one election would then vote for the Communists or the National Socialists in the next, often switching allegiance again in the next election. It is also understandable in such a context the National Socialists would score their first big successes among the university students. Quote, students in brown shirts and swastika armbands were a normal sight in classes well before 1932, unquote. Raised in an intellectual climate in which Fichte, Kant, Hegel, Marx, Nietzsche, and Spengler were the dominant voices, National Socialism seemed to many to be a moral ideal, just as it did to many of their professors who had been schooled in the same works. The students of the 1920s and 1930s saw themselves as rebelling against a corrupt system imposed on them by the foreign, liberal capitalist West. They saw themselves as rebelling against their parents' generation, which had failed during the Great War and after. They saw themselves as rebelling against the capitalism that dislocated the worker, that did not give the worker a fair share, and that had caused the Depression. And they saw themselves as idealistically promoting the liberation of the worker and the German spirit. Speaking of the many bright and talented students from the West who went to Germany to study, Friedrich Hayek has remarked, quote, "Many a university teacher during the 1930s has seen English and American students return from the continent, uncertain whether they were communists or Nazis, and certain only that they hated Western liberal civilization." Unquote. Western liberal civilization, however, survived both the Great Depression and World War II, emerging stronger than it had been before. During the war and its aftermath, the National Socialists and the collectivist right were wiped out physically and discredited morally and intellectually. The new battle lines were simplified and starkly clear: liberal capitalism versus left socialism. End of chapter 4.